When you hear that music, you know it's 11 o'clock on Thursday night. That's right. The always popular it's the Kayak Fishing Radio Network's Late Show. I'm your host, Rob DeVore, otherwise known as a Bad Bat Cast. Having a couple of technical issues here tonight. So just try to bear with me. I just barely got signed in, and you know, some reason my computer is going really slow tonight. So just bear with me. I barely got signed in. You know, by the time I got everything signed in and the switchboard up and everything, they were telling me it's 5 seconds till show. So I just got signed in on time. So forgive me for being late, and welcome to another edition of Kayak Fishing Radio. So you can check me out at my website, and that is badbatcast.com. Send me an email, rob@badbatcast.com, when I get that sorted out there. Having some server problems. It's like a technical faux pas, as it were. So, tonight's show, got a lot of stuff going on. Looks like Redfish Chuck is calling in. Let me see here. Chuck, is that you? Ooh, no. Okay, gotcha. How you doing, Chuck?
Good, buddy.
Sorry, man. I had some technical issues going on. So, forgive me. Forgive me. So, here's Redfish Chuck from Mosquito Lagoon, Titusville, Florida. Yay!
Hey.
Come on, where's these kids? there's part of these kids. All right. Always got to have these kids in there. Here's Redfish Chuck. He's a member of the always illustrious, yet always dreaded Kayak Wars, the official kayak fishing radio team. So how's it going tonight, Chuck?
It's going good, bud.
Yeah?
It's going good.
Are you on the chat room by any chance?
I'm not. Actually, I'm in my garage tying a bunch of flies up as we speak.
I was wondering if... Oh, no. Back to the fly tying bench. What are you making now?
A little creation I like to call a... whatchamacallit.
Now, good one. So, do you copy stuff, or do you just make it up as you go along, or do you have any favorite patterns that you follow?
Well, lately, it's just been, I tied a bunch of those toad flies that you've seen before the last couple of weeks. I think I've got enough now to last probably 3 or 4 years. But lately, I've just been kind of trying to just come up with new stuff, you know. I mean, everything, it's kind of hard, it's kind of hard to come up with something that's really brand new. You know, there's just so many fly patterns that are out there that everything seems to be some sort of a copy off of something or somebody's take off an existing fly, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I know. You know, that's part of it. It's if you can invent something new, you know, it's pretty cool. But, you know, I did see Aaron Adams, his big ugly fly, which is kind of reminds me of a Borski style fly, is in the Orvis catalog now. So that was kind of, that just happened. It's a pretty nice looking fly, man. Well, it's ugly as hell, but looks like it'll catch you some redfish, man.
Yeah.
It's really funny, you know. You get on there and you're like, hey, I could tie it like this and use that, and then you go, oh, it's already done. Damn.
Well,
go ahead.
I did. I followed a gentleman's pattern. He calls it the fugly shrimp. it's so ugly, it's fugly. And, you know, I used some raccoon and some silver flashaboo. I made my own eyes with 40-pound monofilament. I just burned the ends and then used a black Sharpie to kind of make eyeballs with it. And
yeah.
Used some rabbit fur for the body. And it actually is very, very ugly, but I'm pretty sure something would eat it.
Oh, absolutely, man. That's like half the battle. You know, I never used raccoon. Where do you get stuff like that? Do you have a fly tying shop near you or, you know, stuff like
that
sort of stuff? Cool.
Yeah, no, right here in my neighborhood, actually, less than a mile from my house, there's the Fly Fisherman, which is, as the name reads, it is nothing but fly fishing equipment, rods, reels, fly tying materials, and they've got everything. You know, if there's something that you need and they don't have it, or if there's something that you think you want and they don't have it, you probably don't need it.
I know. You know, I always find myself the one near me. It's a mom and pops like outdoors store. It's a one of a kind. Bill Jackson's, and it's right there in Pinellas Park, St. Petersburg area. And this place, man, I tell you what, they have everything that you can possibly imagine outdoor related, and it's nothing cheap. I mean, they don't sell cheap gear there at all. It's always the top quality, top notch backpacks and camping gear and just everything that you can imagine, clothing and shoes and anything outdoors. But their fly tying, that's like the only place I know of in the area that has that extensive of types of fly tie and stuff, you know. So, and every time I go in there, I'm like, oh, you know, I need to go get some dumbbell weights, you know, dumbbell eyes or something, you know. And those things, you know, I always end up walking out of there with about $25 more, you know, worth of stuff than I really went in there for. But so tell me, Chuck, what do you, what day are you coming up to Little Talbot, man, on the President's Day boondoggle there, like as Chip likes to call it?
I'm not sure. I think I might try and slide up there on Friday. I'm going to just kind of play it by ear and see what my schedule allows. I kind of have a weird work schedule at the tackle shop there. My boss is he's currently in a band, actually, that's trying to get signed, and they're actually really good, and they're based out of your neck of the woods over around Tampa area. And so
what do they call
doing a lot of Ironwood.
Mm.
Yeah, band's name is Ironwood. In fact, they're playing Ybor City tomorrow night. No, what's tomorrow night? Saturday night? No, that's Friday night. Saturday
night. Friday.
They're playing on Saturday night over in Ybor City at some bar, I don't know. But anyway, so yeah, my schedule is kind of weird that way, you know, because right now we're kind of working around his schedule with the band and stuff. So,
that's
cool. I'm gonna try and slide up there for an afternoon at least. I really like to get up there early and fish all morning and then the afternoon bite and then just slide on home, you know, at some point mid evening or something.
Well, you know, believe it or not, Chuck, in a former life, I lived the life of a starving musician. I know I don't look like it, but that was at one point, you know, I actually did. I was in the music industry at some point, you know, playing in bands and stuff for 25 years, but really got serious with it in about 2000. And you know, the band I was in, you know, we were able to tour all over the place and go overseas and everything and, you know, make CDs and the whole nine yards, you know. But so I know what that's like. I know what that life is like, and it's a totally different life. I'm retired from it, so. and I got to say, I don't really miss it that much, you know. After doing it, it can be very heartbreaking, you know, putting all your heart and soul into something and it doesn't pan out. So I know what it's like, you know, being in bands and trying to get signed and all that stuff, man. It's definitely, you got to be cut out for it, man.
Well,
Hammerhead's asking.
I'm a curious star myself. Yeah.
What do you think? What kind of stuff you sing?
Oh, dude, it just depends on how drunk I am. I start off usually with something pretty easy. I'm kind of a country guy myself. And then who knows, man, by the end of the night I might be singing some Piano Man by Billy Joel or something.
Nice.
How many shots I have in me, so yeah.
Hammerhead wants to know if I was in a hair band. Actually, I was at one point. It's really funny. We would go on tour with like Firehouse and Tyketto and bands like that, you know, and which were like kind of like towards the end of the hair band phase there. But you know, that's funny because I was bald back then, but I was playing, you know, hair band type music. So all right, so I think that this is great, man. The Yak Angler / Georgia Kayak Fishing / Irish Water Dogs, President's Day Boondoggle, a bunch of people getting together, camping and fishing at Little Talbot Island up in Jacksonville, man. It's going to be awesome. A couple of folks up there and the locals have been, you know, scouting that and pre-fishing it for us and everything. So, and they've been getting on some fish, so I think that we'll probably do pretty good when we get up there, hopefully. And, you know, we can all put our heads together and probably figure out how to catch some fish. Maybe get us on the board at Kayak Wars, man. So I'm kind of excited about that myself, man. I'm dying to get on the board. I'm tired of seeing a big old zero next to my name up there on that, you know, when I check the stats there. So...
Yeah, tell me about it. How many points did I just give up because I couldn't even figure out how to set the camera properly? Actually, that's a lie. I didn't know about it, so, you know, whatever.
All right. You know, it's you'll have that, and, you know, don't beat yourself up about it. You know, we've made fun of you a lot about it, and you know, you'll have that. You'll learn, man. You'll learn. It's a learning experience, so. You know, I just really want to know, and I'm definitely emailing those guys this week to get them on the show. I definitely want to know how you can submit pictures of fish and say, you know, it's 25-inch redfish with no ruler. You know, I don't know, man. It's just beyond me, you know. But
yeah, I'm pretty good at guessing sizes, but I ain't that good.
Yeah. It's kind of hard to tell from a picture, you know. I mean, even if you did have something to scale in there, you know, it'd still be kind of hard to, unless you were, you know, laying it across your knees or something and you go, okay, well, I have this kind of kayak and, you know, it's, you know, X amount wide, you know, maybe you could measure it that way and kind of get a good idea. But I don't know, man, a 20-inch fish is a 20-inch fish.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, man, I really hope that at some point you and some of the other guys listening to the show or even on Yak Angler or Florida Sportsman or any of those websites would be able to make it over my way and would do some fishing in the lagoon and maybe even try and set up a camping trip or something like that. You know, because I really want people to understand, you know, just how awesome a fishery that I have here in my backyard. The pictures don't do it any justice. That, honest to God, and I'm not boasting, that is a typical day in the lagoon. It's really not that... It's really nothing special to catch 9 fish and, you know, 9 reds or 7 reds and a big trout or whatever the case may be. It's pretty standard issue, you know. So, I mean, I didn't really beat myself up about it too bad, but I knew you guys were going to give me a ration of crap about it. And I was expecting it, and it was well-deserved. And
it's okay, man.
But
dude, it's all right. I was just kidding with you. It's okay. You know, everything's a learning experience, man. You know, if you don't learn by that, then, you know, you'll never learn. But Hammerhead says on the chat, wonder if I sit in my kayak while ice fishing, if it'll count for Kayak Wars. I don't know. I don't know if they I don't know if they had a rule on that, but I don't know. I remember ice fishing, and we'd put everything in a sled, you know, like one of those sit-in plastic sleds and drag it all out there, man. Sometimes we'd have a couple of them. But, yeah, man, I don't miss that stuff at all. It's not, you know, it was cool when you're used to the cold, but, man, I don't miss ice fishing. I don't miss the cold part of it, man. But, yeah, it looks like Mark, the landing crew Wheeler, is on from Virginia. What's going on, Mark?
What's going on, man? And quit razzing on Chuck.
Yeah.
He had a camera.
Yeah, yeah. Mark had himself a 20-something inch bass this week and didn't have a camera, you know, just out fooling around. Sometimes that happens, man. So,
yeah, it seems like it happens more often than I'd like.
Yeah. Always bring the camera, man. I don't think I've ever not brought my camera. Why didn't you use your phone, your camera phone or something?
I left it in the truck.
Nice.
Because I was, planning on really pushing myself, in what I was doing at the time. And the last thing I wanted to happen was to dunk my phone or lose it. Then I would really be SOL. And it bit me in the butt.
Well, that's why, I always endorse the always popular Plano. You know, fishing can be hard sometimes. That's why I use a Plano God Series waterproof box by Plano.
Good plug. Good plug.
Is that good? Did I get that one?
That was pretty good.
I wasn't even reading it. I was pretending like I was reading it. No, I use those. I got a couple of those from Outdoor Blogger Network. I actually won two of those. One of them was the big Mama Jama that won't even fit in my center console. And the other one, which I'm giving to, we'll use that as a prize up in Jacksonville for our fishing competition up there. But I'm telling you, man, these boxes are really nice. They're not prohibitively expensive. They do a good job. You can actually submerge that for up to an hour in 10 feet of water without getting water in it. So it's just a shout out for the Plano Guide Series waterproof boxes. And I have a medium one and a very, very large one. So somebody's going to be taking that big one home. And another thing, let me touch on this. I don't get too political, because I think that a lot of people, ruin their blogs or ruin their stuff being political. I have friends that used to have really nice fishing blogs, and then all of a sudden they turned political because there was somebody putting a mine somewhere next to their waterway and it was ruining their waterway and their blog turned into a big political platform, And I'm not trying to do that. But one thing I do want to talk about is this Senate bill, state bill, Senate bill, whatever you call it. It's SB 477, which is a proposal by the Senate to do away with fishing licenses in Florida, okay? And I just want to say that I think that that's a really bad idea. I, for one, like to pay $30 a year for my salt and freshwater licenses because it goes to a good thing, I think overall the FWC, who gets the money from license fees, about $7 million a year, to run the FWC, I think they do a good job. They're not just out, giving people a hard time. They're there for a reason, and they do a great job, not only for keeping our fishery, as good as it is, but they do other stuff too to keep the fishery from being destroyed by development, overdevelopment, and things of that nature. So we want to keep the FWC, and please write your senator, who is Joe Negron from West Palm Beach, and please tell Senator Joe no on SB477. I don't know. So what do you think about that, Chuck? Did you read my thing up there on Yak Angler the other day?
I did. You know what, man? I'm so nervous for the state of our state. I don't really know what the idea is behind a lot of the things that they're trying to do, that being one of them. I'm not going to dive into the fishing regulations and the mental retardation that follows with that, but I just, you know, I honest to God, I feel like that the government is really trying to eliminate fishermen as a whole, and I think by them wanting to disband the idea of a fishing license, it's just another reason for them to kind of point fingers at problems that we have with the environment as far as fish numbers and stock. Because if nobody's buying any fishing licenses, which doesn't make any sense, as you said, if SWC is being funded mainly by fishing license purchases, we are the fishing capital of the world. Why would you take away that easy revenue from a very, very needed governmental agency? You know, I don't know, man. It's sad.
Well, I have a wacky type of I don't know what you call it, conspiracy theory, but you know, the scary thing is that the new administration that went into place in Florida, you know, in August with the election, well, you know, January really, but you know, they're talking about this like you know, deregulation. You know, they're all for deregulation so we can, you know, create jobs in Florida. And I understand that it's a bad time out there. It's a bad environment for people. You know, the unemployment rate is super high. And you know, I think that that's a great idea. But when they deregulate everything and let the corporations run wild, you know, basically Florida is following the state of California for the most part. So, and I think that the plan is this is just my opinion, is that they want to get rid of the FWC because they made a lot of trouble for BP during the oil spill, you know, last summer, you know, in the Panhandle and everything, because that did affect the Panhandle a little bit there, and you know, I think if they want to start drilling for oil off the coast of Florida, which I don't really have that much of a problem with, but you know, my theory is that, you know, they got to get rid of the FWC first before they can do something like that. So, but anyway, that's just my that's my conspiracy theory. You know, keep getting rid of the FWC is a bad idea. And you know, Senator Joe says, you know, none of the other law enforcement entities around the state need to be funded like that from a fee-based schedule. So why should the FWC? But, you know, who's going to fund the FWC if it's not, you know, the fishermen? So that's just my opinion on the subject. I'm not going to spend the whole hour and a half ranting about it. You know, but I feel strongly that, you know, we do need something like the FWC in Florida. It just makes the fishery better. And, you know, $30 is not a lot to pay for a fishing license, you know, in order to get out there and fish and do all that stuff, the stuff that we all love to do.
That's pretty decent.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I'm planning on, my son's 20 months old now, and I'm planning on in another 4 months going and buying him a lifetime license for $250 some odd.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah, that's a great idea.
You know, and I have no problem with that. I think it's a great idea. In fact, when they instituted the land base, the shore license, the short time that they did that, which I'm surprised there hasn't been a class action lawsuit by the folks that have bought that license, because now you no longer need to pay for it. But anyhow, the shore base license that they were requiring you to have in order to fish from the bank, which was before was a no-no for saltwater, you didn't have to have one. Now they decided they're not going to charge you for it. I thought that was even a good idea to charge for that license. You know,
yeah.
Then
oh,
you
absolutely.
Keep tabs on who's fishing and whatnot. The guys that are usually doing the most
poaching are the guys that are fishing from the bank because it's easy access right to their vehicles and get out of there. So, I don't know.
No, I'm right there with you, man. I thought that the shore-based license was a great idea, you know. And at the time that they put that through, I was a shore fisherman, you know. So, I used to just, you know, wade. Before I got a kayak, I would just wade all the time, you know. But I don't have a problem, you know, with paying for a license, man. I don't know why, why they want to do away with that. And, you know, another thing they say is they don't, you know, you don't want the government in your fishing, you know. Well, you know, it doesn't bother me. I don't care, you know, one way or another. I think it's, you know, for the greater good. Hey, Mark, what kind of license requirements do you have up there in Virginia?
We got some screwy ones. If you fish in the ocean, well, these are the new ones. New one is if you fish in the ocean, you don't need a Virginia state license.
Really? Even in a kayak?
Even in a kayak. If you fish in the bays or inlets, you need a license.
Where do they draw the line?
The main reason it's new is because of the National Registry.
Okay.
That's taken a lot of revenue from Virginia because Virginia Beach itself is split into two halves. You have the bay side and the ocean side. And when the tourists come, they don't come to the bay side. It's like the local yokel area. So they go to the ocean side. And that's where we have all the head boats and you know, charter boats and everything else. And it creates a lot of problems right now up here because people don't know if they need it, if they don't need it. So it just kind of screws things up. Me personally, I just buy everything. I have the lifetime license for Kansas and California for fishing and hunting. I lived there long enough to realize I might want to come back here at some point and want to have the opportunity to, you know, kill something either, you know, that breathes dissolved oxygen or breathes, you know, oxygen.
Yeah. You got to get out there and kill something. No, trust me. That's cool.
I'm dying.
That's cool. Yeah, so, I mean, that I was just kind of curious about that because, you know, every state's different and every commonwealth or whatever you want to call it. So I think that that's a, you know, licenses are a good thing, you know. If they do away with that, I think it's just, you know, anything is bad because of that. Let's see, what else did I – oh, okay, so, I jumped into the 21st century – and this week, and got a new BlackBerry Curve. You know, if you smartphone, for all of you smartphone junkies out there. And I know that people are gonna, the iPhone honks and the Android honks are gonna be saying, "Hey, man, why didn't you get an iPhone?" You know, and actually, I don't like touch screen phones myself. I don't think that they get dirty and they don't work a lot of times. And, so I wanted a smartphone, but I still wanted to be able to push buttons on it. So that was my choice for the BlackBerry Curve. It's everything it's cracked up to be. I can do, it's basically like a little laptop in my pocket. So I'm excited about
mine.
That, man. So yay for me, a bad backcast getting into the 21st century.
Yay!
Thank you.
Yay, he's got mail on his phone. Yay!
Well, I did until Yak Sushi changed servers, and now the email doesn't go to my phone, so I got to figure out, I got to reconfigure all that again. So, you know.
I said, don't feel bad. When I need to reset my phone or do something stupid to it, and magically it doesn't pick up my email address, so I got to go drive all the way to Sprint, hand to the guy and go, "It said what? Help me, I can't find my email, help me." And the guy's like, "Well, you hit this and that." So I'm like, "Oh, thank you." I'll go back.
Very nice.
Sit my corner.
Very nice. No, Yak Sushi just switched servers on me, which is fine. You know, it's a faster server and, you know, all of that stuff, and I think that's great. But now I can't get my damn email on my BlackBerry. So, we'll see. You know, it's just it's another technical thing, man. I'm like, I haven't even cracked the surface of what this thing can do yet. But so far, it's pretty awesome. You know, but that's why you need, you know, Mark, you need a you know, your Plano waterproof box, you know, so you can, hang, man.
Store in my garage like I'm doing.
Ah.
I'm trying to tie jigs, and I've lost my jig head.
It sounds like, you know, you're doing a, what they call a parking lot match for WWE or something.
Oh, if you see my garage, you're like, wow, that's a lot of stuff.
It's just a big storage unit,
boxes,
yeah.
Boxes and bags and stunning lead, just not the right lead I want.
Are you allowed to keep your kayak in the garage?
Yes. That's actually what I'm sitting on right now. I've got a, I've got a, like a sawhorse set up, and it holds the kayak in my big butt without breaking yet. So I can sit on that. And
we'll know you in Jacksonville by your U-shaped kayak that you'll be paddling around.
I actually, to tell you the truth, I use four horses just to make sure that doesn't happen.
Nice.
Because I'm 250, and 250 does a lot to plastic. Especially
no kidding.
Fanatic.
I got to take a picture of my kayak rack that I have in my garage. It's actually a pretty cool one. I picked it up from my local kayak shop for, I don't know, I think I paid $100 for it. It holds two kayaks on the side, you know, on their sides. You lay them up on their sides, and it's real narrow. I mean, you can put it up against the wall, and it doesn't take up any more space than the actual width of the kayak would be. Standing up on its side is a pretty cool deal.
That's awesome. You know, my kayak rack is the floor behind my couch in my living room. And that's what, you know, that's what I do, man. That's where I keep it, you know, in my little apartment. And, you know, that it's funny because if I look around at apartments and stuff, I always look to see, now, can I get my kayak up and down the stairs there, you know, or can how am I going to get my kayak in and out of that thing, you know? So I always try to take that into consideration, you know. I don't care about your weight room, and I don't care about your pool, and I don't care about your, you know, free gourmet coffee in the morning. I want to know if I can get my kayak in and out of there.
Yeah, you got to plan ahead, man.
That's right, man. This plate. My brother, he lives in this really old, like 100-year-old house in downtown Clearwater, and it's a been divided up into apartments and stuff, and it's actually a really cool little place. So what I did was, you know, I was looking at it. They always have places for rent there, and they're always, you know, looking for, you know, people moving in and out of there and stuff. Because, you know, you go in there, and it's like, you know, something like $500 a month for everything. You know, not just – it's your electric and your cable and everything all – rolled into one for like $500 a month, and it's not a bad little spot. So I was thinking about possibly you know, moving bad back half central over there, but there's no way for me to get my kayak in and out, man. It's a real skinny hallway, and it's you know, I said, well, what about upstairs? Because you could get like the whole entire attic for like $600 a month, and it's a pretty big space, but it's just no way, you know. It has like a like one of those rickety metal stairways to get up and down. And I'm like, I can't even imagine trying to drag my kayak up and down this thing. You know, you got to make about four turns going up and down, you know, so that's not a good idea.
We're living in our apartment.
What's that?
When I was living in the apartments in San Diego,
yeah,
my kayak never left the top of my truck. My old truck.
And how long did you have it?
I had it until we moved.
Really? Nobody you got it in the middle of the night or anything?
They tried, but I had the Hercules bike cable put through the scupper holes and wrapped around the welded, there was a Yakima rack on top, like the sliding roof rack, and I had my buddy of mine weld it, you know, solid to the top of the cap, and then I put the Hercules set up through there, and it never moved. And several times when I lost my keys, it didn't come off the top of the truck either, so.
That's funny. You know, I've actually, you know, I do a lot of, when I do a lot of night fishing, you know, I'll be getting home, you know, and I'm tired, and, you know, I've been out paddling, and it's, and, you know, tired, and a lot of time, you know, it'll be 3 o'clock in the morning when I'm coming in, and, man, you know, I got to get my kayak off my car, and, you know, stick it on the wheels, and drag it across the parking lot, and, you know, because you can never get in a parking space, you know, close to your apartment, you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning. So,
oh, yeah.
You know, you're rolling that thing across, you know, the whole apartment complex, you know, and out there, you know, cleaning it up and everything, 3:30 in the morning. I'm like, sometimes I get home and I'm like, man, I really don't want to do this, you know, but I've never left it out all night. I've thought about it, you know, just I'm afraid, I'm so scared to death I'm going to come out and that thing's going to be gone one day. So I don't even take a chance on it.
During the summertime, it's pretty much next month until December. My kayak never leaves the top of my truck.
Really?
Well, my main thing is I'll be driving somewhere, and I like to be early to a lot of places. What I mean by early, like 30, 45 minutes early. And I'll just be driving, and if I see a spot that just looks fishy, and I know I've got time, I just might stop off and, you know, throw it in the water. Or like out here during the fall or spring now, there are reports down in North Carolina the stripers running up. But, you know, when the stripers are blitzing, you know, I've got one of the few friends that, you know, live on the water in the bay. And, you know, he's got me on speed dial. He's like, you know, because we have the gannets, the big water birds.
Yeah.
And when they start running on the menhaden and they're pushed to the top, it looks like they're raining out of the sky. You can't see past them. There's so many birds, especially in the spring and fall. And, you know, he'll give me a call, and I'm like, love you, babe, bye. And middle of dinner, you know, whatever. I'm jumping in the truck, throwing on the waders and throwing on the wetsuit and, you know, paddle them up out there. Half the time forgetting the rod, have to paddle back, you know. But,
I usually keep a lot of my fishing gear in the trunk of my car, you know, a lot of times, not everything. I mean, I'm always bringing my poles and reels and all that stuff back in, you know, just to, you know, to wash up and stuff like that, you know, cause salt water is freaking hell on gear. But, man, I just want to, you know, I mean, I keep it, you know, I think I keep my gear bag out there, you know, with a lot of my baits in it and everything. And, I'll tell you what, man, one time I had a bag of those gulp peeler crabs and it leaked and it was in my trunk, man. And I tell you what, I opened up my trunk and I thought I had a dead body in there, man. Those things
stink to high heaven.
That's the stink that keeps on giving, man.
This is a funny story. When I was dating my wife in California, I went out surf fishing for the leopard sharks. And for you all that, you know, that live in San Diego, you all know about the leopard. When they're running at La Jolla, right above the research pier there by Black's Beach. jumped in her car, because I didn't have a car at the time. And booked my way down there in the middle of the night, fishing the surf there, and grabbed my bucket of mackerel and started walking back after catching one or two, and put it in the trunk of the car, got back to the barracks. I was in the Marine Corps at the time, Pendleton. And that morning we got called up to be ready to roll at, you know, zero dark 30 for, you know, situations that were going on in the world. So the car was sitting in the middle of August in the San Diego sun, just baking. And by the time I got back to the car, I cracked that seal. Oh, my wife hated me.
And that was mackerel? Man, I bet you those things stank.
Oh, they had a nice, because there was some water in there too. So there was that nice film on the top.
Oh.
Yeah, it was,
That's just nasty. Chuck, do you get you getting any of the whiff of that menhaden kill down there by D? You getting getting any of that stank? Oh man.
No, I'm too far removed from that right now.
Yeah, she said. I was talking to her the other day, and she said, "Yeah, I'm going. I'm going to. It's an hour and a half to where I'm fishing." And I'm like, "What?" I was thinking she was paddling for an hour and a half to get where she was fishing.
Yeah, no, I'm about. I think she kind of exaggerated a little bit. I'm probably about an hour maybe right at about an hour away from where she's at. If you take the highway I don't think she drives the highway though, so maybe she is about an hour and a half out. But that's funny because my county, Brevard County, is the longest county in the state, and it's polar opposites. It really is. And when things go bad down there, it's just like you don't even know it up here. It's just, I don't know, just totally different areas. Which makes it cool though, because if you wanna change a scenery and a change of species, you just head down to where D's at, and you're fishing a completely different style. You know, so it's kind of cool.
Well, you know the when we had the fish kill here last winter, man, it got a little bit warm there, and there was like dead. It was like they were like medium sized finger mullet, you know, that were just dead all over the place, man. And those things, man, it just got stankin', man. You couldn't get anywhere close to the water without smelling that stuff. It was just nasty. Those things were all over the place. But, yeah, that's no fun. Sharks were probably having a field day then. But,
yeah, you'd be surprised by the sharks.
Yeah,
what's
down there, Chuck? By D, down there by D, the Sebastian Inlet really pulls a lot of water out of that part of the river, so... I would imagine that won't be the case down there for too terribly long. Usually that it kind of tends to clean itself up pretty quick.
Yeah. Now, what causes that? Do you know? I mean, there's been so many major fish kills, you know, around. And I don't think it's because of the cold.
No, there's just when the pogies, we call them pogies, when the pogies get in the river that thick in a kind of centralized area, they tend to just suck up all the oxygen. And it just kills them all off. They're too stupid to realize that they can't go into a cove by the millions and billions that they swim into the river that way, and they can't go into a cove and just, you know,
hang out.
Be all right. You know, they suck all the oxygen. My buddy was down there while they were dying, and he was like, "That's exactly what it looked like. It looked like they were all swimming across the surface, gasping for air, trying to get air, and there's no air, so they just died. Whatever."
Wow. Weird. But that's cool. Yeah, they're bait fish and stuff. Can't really say that they're the smartest of organisms on the face of the earth.
You definitely don't want to be reincarnated as a bait fish.
No. If you've ever seen the some of the, what do they call that, the end up in New York and, you know, the around that area, New England and stuff. They call it the end. It's this big, huge, what is that? Is that like a sardine run or something, Mark, up there?
The end? The Montauk?
Yeah, like in September.
Bluefish and false albacore blitzes.
Yeah, it's just...
When the big fish start migrating south, they, like especially around Montauk, you have two converging currents. You have the Long Island Sound current and the Atlantic current that these fish get trapped in the two currents, and they kind of just bottle up a little bit. And it's just a heyday for, you know, all the predatory species, because it's literally like a washing machine during a really good tide change.
What you don't understand, Chuck, is that this – the bait is unbelievable up there. It's just as far as you can see, and they just, it's for days and days and days on end of just never ending, you know, stream of bait fish going, moving south, you know.
Yeah, no, I grew up up there. I know what.
Oh, did you?
Like. Yeah. I used to fish Montauk all the time.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Man,
Turtle Cove.
Yeah,
and...
incredible.
I've always wanted to fish that, man. You know, as a matter of fact, one of my my buddy Pete McDonald, who writes the Fishing Jones blog, he's a writer and everything, and he's writing a book about that, about the Blitz, with Tosh Brown's doing the photography, man, and they just have some unbelievable pictures. It's going to be like a coffee table type book, and I mean, some of the pictures they've got so far is just it's ridiculous. But I've always wanted to fish that, man. You know, it's like I've heard all these stories about, you know, Montauk and the Blitz and, you know, getting up there in September and everything, man. And apparently it's something to behold, man. So that's one of the things on my list of things to do.
I just actually the other day, my grandparents went ahead and got my Suffolk County beach buggy permit.
Nice.
Suffolk County. My dad was my dad's retired law enforcement from Suffolk County.
Wow. Right. That's cool,
yeah,
man.
And I just finished my renewal for MS Montauk Surfcasters and Libba, so I'm set.
There you go.
Now, were you, Mark, were you ever one of those guys that, you know, had the rod holders on the front and back of the vehicle and you know, you'd go driving down the beach with, like, you know, about 15 rods, you know, and rod holders on the front of your car.
Nah, you only need about four. A popping rod, a 10, maybe a diving plug, and maybe a live bait, you know, rod if you're feeling lucky, you know, throwing an eel or a bunker chunk. But
let me tell you what, those guys up there, Mark being one of them apparently, those surf fishermen from Long Island, from Montauk area, that's a totally different breed of individual.
Oh, yeah.
I don't care. I mean, those guys are so freaking hardcore. I mean, I was a kid going out there watching grown men walk out and stand on one little lonely-ass rock and getting smashed by waves and throwing with their van stalls, their $700 and $800 van stalls and their custom 15-foot surf rods, throwing big pencil poppers out into the Blitz. And it's just, it's the most incredible thing that you'll ever witness in your entire life as far as fishing goes, to see all ages of people, kids and, like, old dudes, like really old dudes that probably shouldn't be standing out on rocks and doing things. It's just, and Mark will agree, that's just the way it is. And we think as kayakers that we're pretty extreme and you know, we're all ate up with this. We got nothing on those guys. That's, like I said, that's a special kind of person to do that day in and day out. That's for
you
sure.
Had to introduce kayak fishing up there during the Blitz.
Oh yeah,
I'm sure there's guys, you know, doing it. So,
I mean, Montauk is known for, you know, just wild and crazy extreme people. For instance, Frank Mundus, the Monster Man, the Cricket Two. I was,
God rest his soul.
I know that. I know that name.
He died recently. Thought he was living in Hawaii.
Yeah. No, Mundus passed away, man.
Christ.
By the way,
man,
you don't know who Frank Mundus is, he was the guy that inspired the character Quint on Jaws. In, you know, Peter Benchley's, you know, he was the renowned shark hunter back in the day up in that area, New York and New Jersey.
But, you know, I remember as a kid seeing him in the company on the Cricket too. You could always see it from Shagwan Point as he was riding in, because the Cricket too was the ugliest damn boat I've ever seen. It's this gnarly, like, lime faded green, you know, that color where you look at it and it makes you sick to the stomach to even be on the boat. But I remember him coming in, and the stern of the boat, the back of the boat, was halfway underwater, him just chugging along. And everyone on the beach knew Mundus had another big fish. And this was right after he caught that, you know, monster great white about 4 years before that. And
I saw that shark.
We get in there. Yeah. Tom, the guy who actually reeled in the shark, actually lives just down the road from me.
Really?
He's got some great stories about that, yeah. About how they, and this is, you know, what is a big no-no, but what they did to catch that shark was they went out and they heard about a dead whale about 15 miles off the shore from Montauk Point. And they went out there the day before, and they saw this humongous great white just gorging itself on this shark, on this whale. So they got the bright idea. They came back out the next day with a really big, you know, 25-aught hook, and took a chunk out of the whale, put it on the hook, and then it was either Tom or Steve, one of the mates, jumped out on the whale and was standing on the whale itself as these sharks were, you know, gorged on it and waiting for the biggest shark to come up. And then they took this hook and with the bait in it, and they were trying to throw it in the shark's mouth. get him to, you know, eat it.
That's a true story.
That's cheating.
And they finally got him hooked up and, you know, and got him hooked.
It was cheating. That's why Mundus was so pissed. No, seriously, Mundus for a long time was very, very angry with the IGFA because they wouldn't take the shark as a true world record. It's the largest fish that's ever been caught on rod and reel. Period.
Yeah,
nobody can argue it.
What is it, like 2,700 yeah. pounds or something like that?
Yeah, it was huge.
I remember seeing pictures of it.
We were fishing. Me and my dad were fishing in where the hell were we? I think we were in Babylon, and we got word that Mundus was coming in with this monster shark. Everybody heard about it. It was scuttlebutt going around, you know, just everybody knew about it. And so we hauled butt. We went back. We got in the car and hauled butt out to Montauk and got there as he's coming in. And the crane, after the crane finally got the shark up on the deck and everybody was taking pictures, Frank's taking pictures, the guys are kneeled down next to it and everything, and they finally got the thing weighed. I forgot what it weighed, man, but it was. I saw the shark, like, from me, you know, to, like, my front door. It was right there. It's the biggest animal I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It was something like 2,700 pounds.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. It was ridiculous. But, yeah, Mundus, and they figured they had themselves a world record. You know, they figured that it would be an actual certified world record. And that's Mark said, that's a big no-no in IGFA. You can't chum with mammal flesh. You can't chum with mammal blood. You can't chum with anything that has to do with a mammal, period.
That was the reason? I didn't realize
absolutely.
That.
Otherwise, it would have been an all-tackle record, you know?
And here's the thing. If they would have just been fishing, and they said they were drifting by it, and, you know, they were fishing for, like, makos or blue sharks or whatever, and they hooked up on it, but they weren't using it as chum, the IGFA would have, you know, allowed it. But because,
yeah.
I think it was Steve. Steve started with a P, jumped out onto the whale and actually threw a chunk of whale meat. And that was the other big no-no. They used mammal flesh as the bait, and he threw it in the shark's damn mouth. You know, there's a great book, if you can find it. It's called Monster Man. And it, you know, Mundus didn't write it because Mundus was illiterate. He couldn't read or write. He could read a map. He could understand the numbers, but he couldn't understand all the writing that was also on there, which many people don't know. And it's just amazing what that man could do. And there was an interview, I'm going to say about 3 or 4 years ago, with Frank, and he said that was the worst judgment he's ever made in his life, was to kill all those sharks. I mean, the story I was telling you about, that when he was bringing in was a whale shark or baleen whale. No, yeah, whale shark is, you know, this humongous shark. You know, and, you know, he was, everyone's talking about, how'd you get that thing? And, you know, he finally said, we harpooned it. You know.
Here it is. I just looked it up. He harpooned a 4,500-pound white shark off of Montauk. Holy crap, that's huge! And in '86, he caught that record. It's 3,427 pounds on rod and reel. Holy crap! Largest shark.
That record will never be broken.
Yeah, that's not only for largest shark, but largest fish of any kind ever caught by rod and reel. And they did say Intermission. the IGFA ruled the catch was legitimate based on photographs, but they didn't say whether or not he was, Yeah, it didn't say whether or not they accepted the record or not.
They didn't. They didn't, in fact. Because, like I said, he was bitter. He was bitter all the way till the day that he died about that. Because he knew deep down inside he had the record. Now, here's an interesting twist. That record will never be broken because white sharks are completely protected all the way around the world. You can't catch them, and you can keep them, you can't kill them or nothing. So there's no way for anybody to break that record. And there is no other fish that we know of that swims in the ocean that you can catch on rod and reel that grows that big.
Oh, I know. And how are you going to weigh it? Even if you just so happen to hook one, how are you going to weigh it?
Yep. Yeah.
I don't know, man.
But, you know, it's kind of crazy. I'll tell you what, man. I've spent a lot of nights out on the ocean doing grouper fishing and snapper fishing trips and out of my coast. And there's a lot of things that go bump in the night, man. And I've seen some things that boggle your mind. And I know for a fact on a couple of occasions what I saw were white sharks. And the pure mass of those things, it's incredible. Like, it blows your mind when you see something like that. It literally gives you chills because suddenly you don't feel like that 47-foot Hatteras you're sitting in is that big, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, the biggest sharks I run into, you know, would be, let's see, last summer I did see about an 8-foot bull shark, you know, which when you see it up close in your kayak, you know, from about 20 feet away, that's a pretty big shark, man. I'm sorry. I don't care who you are or what you are. That's a big shark, man, especially in this area, you know. And the scary thing was it was, probably about, I would say, 50 feet off the beach, maybe 50 or 75 feet off the beach where people were swimming. You know, that was like really, that's kind of scary. But, yeah, I can imagine that seeing a huge white shark like that, you know, when you're on a bigger boat, is definitely, it's gonna put some fear. I just would be like totally. I wouldn't be scared to death or anything, but I would definitely think that was the coolest thing that I ever saw. Is going out and seeing a big, white shark in person, you know, right there in the flesh, right off your, in the water right next to your boat. I think that would be awesome.
I'll tell you what, last spring, the coolest thing I ever saw out of a boat, kayak or boat, period, last year during the springtime, we were catching a bunch of cobias, and the mola molas, or sunfish, Atlantic sunfish, were cruising around right up underneath the surface. And if you've never seen one of them, now that is something freaky. It's basically a giant head with two fins, and that's pretty much it.
Actually,
there was probably.
Go ahead.
There was actually three or four of them that were cruising around this shoal that we fish a lot for cobia, and I couldn't help myself, man. I jumped right in and I had to swim around with one, and the other thing too was a leatherback turtle, which is about the size of a Volkswagen Bug. I think it's the largest turtle on the planet.
What kind of turtle?
A leatherback sea turtle.
Okay, really? They're that big?
Oh, they're huge. They're absolutely huge. And it's funny because whenever they go to take a deep breath, we all say the same thing. It sounds like a jet engine taking off because their lungs are so big they can stay down for so long. While they're filling up their lungs, it literally sounds like a jet engine taking off. It's pretty cool.
Yep. No kidding.
We have them up here. And Sandbridge, which is just south of me on the border of North Carolina, is a major breeding ground for them. And it's pretty funny, all the lights on the oceanfront that are oceanside, when they start spotting them, have to go to red because the turtles, they figured out, use the stars as their, when they should breed and everything else. And they went ahead and realized, ooh, we're screwing these turtles up by using white lights. It looks like the stars. So all the lights, when they come in, go to red. But
no kidding.
you know, we'll be out there fishing, and, you know, oh, here they come. And you can hear them.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
Go back on there, it's like, whoa,
you know,
what the hell was that? And
you know
what's crazy?
You know what scares me to death when I'm out? And it, I mean, not scares me to death, but startles me to death is a lot of times I'll be out fishing and it'll be all nice and quiet and just, you know, you're out there, you're relaxing and you're like focused on trying to find fish and stuff. And then all of a sudden a manatee will surface like right next to the kayak. And you know, they blow that blowhole and it's like, oh, God, it just startles me. I know it sounds stupid and you look over and you see this big, you know, massive, you know, dark colored thing sitting in the water right next to you. It's just kind of freaky, you know.
Hey, I'm more
worried
about manatees than I am about gators, man.
Really?
Knock
your kayak over?
Yeah, I've had a number of my friends get thrown in the air first thing in the morning by manatees. Get literally the kayak and them go about 4 foot up in the air and they land in the water. Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
That's awesome.
Wow.
Well, you startle them because they sleep on the bottom, so it's kind of crazy.
No, I didn't know that. I didn't know that they slept on the bottom.
Yep.
That's awesome.
Yep, they sure do. They'll lay on the bottom, and you'll paddle over the top of them, you know, first thing in the morning when they're still laying there, and it freaks them out, and they go to take off, and it's just one big kick of that big old tail, and they throw you for a ride, that's for sure.
Never heard of that. That's awesome. All right, well, listen, we're at the end of the hour here, so I'm going to get out of here. I'm, like, dead tired, man. I got to go to sleep. So you guys, you getting out fishing the next couple of days there, Chuck?
Yeah, I'm going to try and sneak out on Monday if I can.
Awesome.
I'm going to hit the same spot I fished in the lagoon and on Tuesday and see if I can actually put some points on the board this time.
Awesome. I can't wait. I can't wait to get up to Little Talbot, man, and hopefully I can get on the board. Of course, you know, I'm the king of being able to locate dink trout. Okay, so, you know, maybe if we have a prize for the smallest fish caught over the weekend. Oh, did anybody come up with the booby prize yet for Little Talbot?
I'll bring
Nothing?
Something up. Booby prize.
All right.
It could be my gas bill.
Your gas bill, yeah. Well, I'm already tethered to that one there, bro. So I'll help you with that, man. Don't worry. All right, man. Well, you guys have a good weekend, and I will see you next week, same time, same place, and all that. Don't forget to take a kid fishing.
Later.
All right, man. See you guys later. Well, that's it for us, man. And thanks for tuning in to another edition of Kayak Fishing Radio. I'm your host, Rob DeVore, otherwise known as the Bad Batcast. Go ahead and check out my site, www.abadbatcast.com. And check out yakangler.com, Georgia Kayak Fishing, Irish Water Dogs. Check it all out, man. It's all good. And until next week, this is a Bad Batcast saying good night.